But you know, I've already told you how I feel about the entire book. I mean, to me, it's a masterpiece. And I think, you know, over time, I could actually envision the book actually being a classic.
What if story is the answer to our crises of meaning and belonging, to our impulse to heal our lives and help others, to our desire and drive to leave this world better than we found it? Now, we love good stories. In fact, we're kind of obsessed, not just with the stories themselves, but with the stories behind the stories. Their oddly perfect timing, the healing process they provoke in their authors, and their capacity to catalyze individual and collective change. And we love exploring these with writers, thought leaders, entrepreneurs, healers, parents, and others. Tune in to hear these stories behind the stories and entertain with us the real possibility that whether you are a teller or a consumer, story is always offering or leading us to an answer. When Aaron and I sent out our manuscript for A Religion of Story, we had no idea what type of feedback we would get. As the spiritual leaders, educators, psychologists, change agents, and parents began to weigh in, we decided maybe it would be a good idea to record a few conversations that future readers could tune into as they face their own religion of story and everything this book will bring up for them. First up today is a conversation with readers with various religious backgrounds who were challenged and moved as they pressed on and read through to the end of Aaron's conclusion. Is there a God? Where did we come from? And where are we supposed to be going? And is there really only one way? This conversation around arguably the most important topic with which humans wrestle will hopefully inspire you to get curious about all the ways in which the answers are always arriving, even through story. All right, welcome to Sips of Story and Sanity, where we talk about the stories behind the stories with authors, speakers, thought leaders, healers, parents, and more. Today, we are doing something special. So a few weeks from the day that we're recording this, I am launching a book called A Religion of Story with my son, Aaron, who is on the team. And we have been, you know, asking people to read it. People have been reading and editing, and we have been hearing some amazing feedback and some very emotional feedback. And I realized, you know, we worked hard through the process of writing this to not have this be a polarizing conversation, but we are calling it A Religion of Story. And so today is really focused on supporting those of our readers who come from a religious background and may be wondering, like, what are you talking about? There is only one religion. And why are you talking about a religion of story and getting a little upset about some of our talks about using story as some sort of sacred text? So we will have some fun today talking about all of the different reactions that people had while reading this, because I was getting texts and emails and comments in the Google Docs as people were going through. So one thing I know for sure is that all of these folks here keep it real and honest. So there will be probably plenty of laughter and tears. So I've asked each one of them to kind of share a little bit of their background. So while they're thinking of that, I'll just give you the quick background for myself. And this story that we're writing is, you know, when Aaron arrived in the world, I was in the middle of a spiritual crisis. I had gone to the university and been hanging out in an honors program that was asking me, what do you believe and why? And what happens if there is no God? And my whole very Christian upbringing kind of shattered into a million pieces. And so during those years, I was doing my best to reconstruct it with the help of some allies, a few allies that I had at the time. and also great stories. And so when he arrived, I wasn't comfortable bringing him into my old religion, and I didn't really have my new religion figured out yet. And so one day we had this very strange conversation at our table where he was like, "Mom, where's our Bible? Why don't we have one?" And my husband really brilliantly said, "Actually, right now, Avatar, The Last Airbender is our Bible." And I was like, "Oh my God, that's brilliant." Because I had just spent all of these years in an honors program figuring out how to engage story in a way to understand universal truths and develop character and preserve freedom. And so that has been our journey for the last decade plus, hanging out, watching great movies and great TV shows and sorting through, like, what do we really believe about our origin? What do we really believe about how we're supposed to interact with each other and the world? And so that's our exploration in a religion of story. And who should I pass it off to? Who's ready to share just a little synopsis of your lens, where you're coming from?
Well, maybe it might make sense for me to go right off of that, talking about our story together. So like she said, I was, I was born in the middle of a religious faith crisis. And I was probably almost raised pretty atheist, right, Mom? Like, wouldn't you say I got pretty close to that. And so where did we find our Bible? Well, I was, I never really had engagement with any one religion in particular. And actually I didn't really have any until I was about maybe 13 or 14 when we first moved to Oregon. And you guys had actually talked about going back to church. And we tried out a few churches, and they weren't for us still, even though, I don't want to speak for you, but we still revere the Bible as like a really important, super wisdomous text of amazing truths. And also, using story to cultivate a perspective that integrates, more than just that one text, because a lot of stories have just as much wisdom and as many truths as the Bible that we found when you really have the intention of digging through it. And so, a religion of story is not meant to say, watch story and use story instead, but I think it's more about use it alongside of and be intentional wherever story may come up, whether it's on the screen, in a book, or it's in the Bible, right? It's a lot of collections of stories that teach really important things about God and the universe and whatever you call it, that, are, universal and throughout stories, even on the screen. So why just use it there and bring it out with you, like, you might read in the book out into the world in other scenarios in your own story that isn't necessarily fiction, right? And so that's where I come from. And, if you want a super deep dive on my actual religious views and views about God, you should read the conclusion of the book. And I will pass it to the next person who wants to go. Or I will throw you in if there is nobody.
I grew up a pastor's kid and a very conservative religious home. And then married my husband, a pastor. So we pastored for a lot of years, and that's our background. I did have a crisis of sorts, because we were in a very conservative, legalistic background, religious background. And, around 40, 42, I started having asking questions that I'd never asked before, and went through my dark night of the soul, where I had to reshape my religious thinking and how I was going to live that out in the world. Well, that's my story. I'll give it to you.
Well, let's see. I would say that I kind of got pulled into the United Pentecostal Church, and that's where her dad was an evangelist. We had a rough go of it there. I've been a minister or been a pastor in that church. I had been when we left 23 years. Very hard to leave. But I'm so very impressed with the book. And I, not yet.
Oh, yeah, just introduce yourself first.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. And I'm her husband.
I'm glad you're here, Dick.
Thank you. Thank you.
Who wants to jump in?
That yellow line.
I will jump in. I was raised, I grew up in a home where alcohol was the initial religion. And then my dad became saved and we started going to a Methodist church. And so things became kind of night and day for me. I mean, like things totally switched. And as I became a teenager, I started really rebelling against that. And I was very strict, just not a lot of leeway for thought processes, for your own way of thinking, to kind of figure things out for yourself. There was right and there was wrong, and that was it. And so my home was rather abusive. And I used to think, you know, if God really loved me, why did he put me in with this family? And why do I have to suffer this if he really loves me? And so I left home at 16 and went on my own. And then once I started having kids, I was married and had kids. God became an important thing again, and I, like Amanda, decided, you know, hey, maybe we need to teach these kids some some basics, some teach them about God, because I have always felt like God was important. I just didn't know that I agreed with the way I was raised, and so I started searching that out for my own, and actually ended up at 25 or 26. Joining the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And I have spent the last 30 years now, I guess, serving in that church in major callings and little callings, working with kids and primary kids and working with the adults and leaders and such and early society. So I've had a whole gamut of experiences as far as different styles and types and ins and outs. And that's me.
Thank you.
I can go next if that's okay. Because I was trying to think about how to talk about my experience with religion, because I did not grow up in the church with any kind of religion, but absolutely grew up with alcohol as a religion. So you're saying that, Lori. Just made me think about that. And it fits with my own journey of, you know, I left home at 17 and wandered for a while. And in my early 20s, got a job with a company whose philosophy was founded in the Lakota Sioux Nation. Very, very spiritual. So that was my real exposure to the idea of spirituality, origin stories, universal truths, how things came about. And when I was younger, I used to read a lot of mythology, and I didn't know at the time that that's part of what I was reading was origin stories, and always loved it. So as I've moved along in my path, I never established myself with any type of organized or formal religion or in a church, but would consider myself far more spiritual and very attached to the idea of universal truth and the collective unconscious and kind of the mythology that like is kind of above and beneath all of us. Thanks for saying that, Lori. It helps get me started.
That's one of the things that came up as we were even working on some of the promotional materials for the book, is like this idea that actually everyone has a religion of story. You know, it's not that there is a religion of story. It's that we all have one that we should maybe explore, because we've all been raised on narratives in our family systems, in our churches, in our other organizations, community spaces, where, you know, these types of values are really important and foundational. So I appreciate you bringing that in.
I grew up in a broken home, but I was also taken to church as a young kid. And so I had like both of these worlds going on at the same time, something very dysfunctional and then something that was more spiritual. And I was very sensitive to the idea of God, the love of God, but I was also penetrated pretty deeply with the fear of God. And because I left home at 15, like others did, I did wonder, got into the military as soon as I could. My grandmother had been the main influence of love and spirituality in my life. Although she, you know, had a third grade education, she was quite a spiritual woman. But I was the first grandchild, and so I had this relationship with her that was very special. And when she died at 19 years of age, it was a invitation for me to kind of revisit my spiritual life. And so I made a very strong commitment at 19 to get involved in the church, ran into a great deal more of dysfunction, became a little bit disillusioned, and re-enlisted in the military and kind of floated back away. And during the next 3 years, I nearly ruined my life in so many different levels, it wasn't even funny. But then there was a wake-up call, and I turned back to my faith. For me, there was never a question of God. There was a lot of questions around the packaging in which God was being presented to me. But I pursued ministry, got into the ministry, and was in ministry for over 30 years. Was a very successful evangelist, traveling around, speaking in multiple churches. I tried several times at pastoring and never really found that that was my niche, but it just seemed the natural progression for me. And, you know, you get a wife and kids, and they don't want to stay in a trailer and be somewhere else every week. And they want roots, and they want houses, and they want clothes, and they want toys, and they want a life. And so you start making these changes. But I did have a great deal of inner conflict around all of the things that I saw and experienced. And I wasn't somebody who could just let it go. It was something I had to try to figure out what was going on. And a friend of mine once said that pastoring would be the greatest experience in the world if it wasn't for people. And, but these, you know, we all have these things that we bring to the table. And, I found, you know, that, church was not exempt from problems. And, that community was, it had its own elements of a challenge. And, so I just reached a point, where I knew that because of the religion that I was in, there were just some things I just didn't believe. You know, I never really believed it, but I became a proponent of it because I was mentored in it, and it was expected of me. And so I never voiced it, but the day came when I had to admit to myself there were just certain things that I didn't believe, that I couldn't continue in, and that I did not want to force upon my children and even my wife. And so I made the decision to resigned the church that I was pastoring. I went into business and spent the next few years in business and was quite successful at that. And then opportunities began to pop up that invited me back into the religious background. And I mean, not background, but back into the religious experience. And I had to go that route one more time before I realized, okay, I'm going to spend the rest of my life serving people in a completely different domain. And so I did that. I don't have, that's a good place, I think, probably leave it. And so I'm in pursuit now of the same God, but trying to undo all of the layers of stuff that really never belong. And I will pass it to Alyssa.
Thanks, Rick. I was just thinking about how I've been engaged in this community for so long and interacting with so many of you guys for so long. And, you know, we've all managed to find a really beautiful common language in the way that we show up for each other in spiritual ways, in spiritual struggles. And it's a really beautiful thing to hear a little bit about everyone's background and the journey they've all been through, right? Because there's always points of relation along the along all our different paths and experiences. And I think that something that wounded me when I departed, because I grew up in a primarily Christian home, and at 16 started diving into what that actually meant for myself, and started going to, you know, healing ministries and youth groups and Bible studies. And I started kind of really figuring out what it all meant for me. And it wasn't until I was in my first semester of college and I was super passionate about all these courses that I was taking that challenged the faith that I grew up with. And I had started asking questions and started challenging some of the things mentors were telling me and the church was teaching me. And there was so much, there was so much animosity and hostility that comes in at that point when someone starts doing those things. But it's such a pivotal part of the journey, and hearing you guys all talk about it, it's like this, this very common wound. And I think that it keeps us from sharing very often. And so I just want to acknowledge it's a really beautiful thing to have a podcast that is sort of focused on this, because it's also a really beautiful thing when you hear other people talk about the love and the light that they grew up knowing, and you know, all those points of disconnection along the journey and trying to find their way back to that. So that's a little bit about my journey too. As soon as I got to college and started asking all those questions, the sort of the spiritual pillars that kind of held my world up started to collapse a bit, especially with some bigger crises I started experiencing in different parts of my life. And I had no spiritual coping mechanisms. And so it really sent me into quite the predicament for a few years there. And it wasn't until fortunately, Amanda came along the way and asked me a question that uprooted the perspective I was searching through, if that makes sense. The sort of the perspective that drove me out there, you know, this like there's one answer to this question that is just that I have to get answered and I have to find it. And you know, she asked, what if there is no answer? Like, what if there is no one answer? What if there is no one God? And like I said, it uprooted all of everything I was dealing with, but it like brought me to ground zero and it cleared the slate. And it's been a learning journey for me ever since. And that's usually my answer always to the spiritual questions that come up or to the belief questions that come up is I stay student. You know, there is so much to be learned out there in the world in different cultures and their different origin stories and mythology and doctrine. And it's really beautiful when we listen. So I'm happy to be here. I'll pass it on over to you, sis.
Thanks for sharing. I think it is really, you know, this was the reason why I did this with Aaron, was because it had happened to me, and I had a few friends that it had happened to as well, where they had been raised with this one thing. And then when that one thing had a pillar kicked out from underneath it, the whole building came down, you know. And it was like, this, what I learned was that it was more important to be in the question of this or that than it was to have the answer. So, you know, I'm wrestling with conversations, Socratic conversations around predestination and free will. And the whole time I'm thinking, like, can we really get to a freaking answer on this? Like, really, like, Aaron, firsthand evidence, right? Like, where do we get the actual evidence that one of these is truer than the other? And so, and in the background, I was dealing with some crazy shit in my life, like just really hard stuff, people wiping out, me wondering what was happening to my health. And the places that I would have gone to before, like Alyssa said, I couldn't rely on those answers. And so this idea of using story with Aaron to ask questions, you know, people read that book and I hope that they see that I was asking the questions as much for me as I was for him. Like I knew when he got here that we were going to have to figure some stuff out together, because I definitely did not have it figured out. And so, that is kind of the ground level of why I think that this project is important, that it's a bigger conversation than, you know, is it okay to just sit with your kids in front of a television for hours on end and, you know, consume? Well, what if we didn't just consume? What if we used it to ask these big questions that they're going to be asking? And wouldn't it be better if they were asking it with you there, being in a curious state, than, you know, by themselves at 18, curled up in the fetal position, feeling like they can't talk to anyone? So I'm curious, though, having these diverse backgrounds in the space, what was the experience of, you know, in the introduction, again, pretty much how I opened it up, right? This moment of my husband saying, yeah, Avatar the Last Airbender, you know, that Nickelodeon cartoon that we are totally addicted to, that's our sacred text right now. Like, what did that bring up for people? Because, you know, it made sense to me in the moment, but I realized it was probably a big deal for some folks who adhere to other sacred texts. So anyone want to jump in?
I'll jump in on that one, because you guys told me about that show while I was in the middle of my spiral, and I started watching it and I was just marveling at it, because I walked away from these episodes with questions that I didn't even know I had around communication and friendship and relationship and big feelings about what's going on in the world, with maybe sometimes it wasn't answers, but it was just more resonance. It was more calm. It was more like, hey, there may not be one answer, but there are solutions. And that show, I was literally just telling someone last night about how that show is like it's like a mixture between all of the textbooks we never got in school and all of the, you know, sacred texts that we got too much of in churches and, you know, groups. So I loved that part.
Well, when I first read that, I, you know, where I am today, and there was not a problem for me, but I immediately saw that as potential stumbling block for some people who might, you know, start reading this and not hit them so early on. But it does make me think about story, and we use, you know, we talk about story all the time, but maybe you could take a few minutes and elaborate on how this story, what you really mean by story. I know for me, if you truly believe that God is everywhere, then you can't possibly think that you can only learn from him in some single cell. You have to be able to recognize God, you know, everywhere. And I think that there are so many ways to see truth, to have truth introduced into your life, to be able to embrace, you know, truth. And I certainly did not, well, for many years, even in our religion, we didn't even have television and we weren't allowed to watch movies. And so after seeing the way that you and Aaron watched movies all these years, I felt like, I think I made a comment to you that, you know, you've ruined me because now I don't even know how to watch movies. And it's like, I'm watching a movie and I just take the remote and pause it for no dang reason whatsoever, just to ask myself, okay, what am I supposed to be getting here? What's this story? And there's gotta be some meaning, you know, to why that door shut to the right, not to the left. I don't know, but I wanna see it. And so, yeah, and I've watched a lot of these movies with my grandson and I'm like, okay, I gotta go back and rewatch those if I could even, you know, pull him into it. And so we could have conversations, or maybe I could just pick up from where we are in the new movies that come out. But story, you know, I don't think you're saying what some people might interpret that to be. And so let's just talk a little bit about story, blow that up a little bit so we can understand it better.
Sure. Please. Yeah, absolutely. So Aaron, do you want to?
Well, what we mean that story from like a, maybe at a base level or a high level, I don't know which term to use there, but you know, obviously stories, books, movies, TV shows, at a very deep level, I think it's the human experience. That's what stories are, is like the portrayal of different human experience and truth and perspectives without all the trivial stuff connected to it. And that's what Jordan Peterson said. That's where I get that. That didn't come from my own brain, but it's amazing. And I think it's really true, right? Every story has nuggets of wisdom and lessons from an actual person's experience, and they're passing it down. It's wisdom, and it's and they're universal truths. I think that might be the best way to define the story, mm-hmm. or in the way that we're talking about.
Yeah, it's kind of like he talked about Jordan Peterson, and Jordan Peterson right now, as we're releasing this, is on a roll about story and fiction and how important narrative is to our culture and to keeping it whole, like to preserving its good foundations. And he says things like, sometimes fiction is more true than real life. And it's like, right? It's interesting because, I mean, have you ever felt like you've watched a really good movie or read a really good book and you had more of a human experience than you do in your everyday life, right? Like you go through and you do like the mundane things every day, right? You brush your teeth, you make the meals, you hang out with people, and maybe that's not very mundane, but these are the things that make up our lives. And so when we sit down and we engage in a story, the story kind of distills all of the most important elements of what makes us human into 30-minute episodes or, you know, 90-minute movies or 500-page books, right? Where it's like you get the opportunity to really wrestle with, like, it's really hard to be human sometimes, right? And other times it is so incredibly awe-inspiring and beautiful. And, you know, if we have that experience and we can figure out how to identify it as people are having it on a screen or in a book, then maybe we can start to say, like, how do I bring more of that into my everyday, maybe a little too mundane versus, you know, routine sort of experience. So I love that you said that, Aaron, because it really is like a magnifying glass on the incredibly beautiful and brilliant parts of humanity, and also the scary shadowy stuff too, that, you know, maybe we should figure out.
Is an even better teacher in many ways.
In many ways. So true.
Well, I do think it's pretty powerful that, you know, oftentimes the way God was presented in my culture, in my religious culture, was, you know, if you don't believe this, then you're damned, you know, and you're dangling hell and the lake of fire and all these horrible, you know. And so the thing about the movie is, if you didn't get the movie right, you know, the producer of the movie isn't threatening to put you in hell. You know, you get a chance to rewatch the movie. And so that's, you know, I think it's just a completely different setting, you know, to maybe explore, you know, these messages and the truths. And I agree with you. I mean, movies have a way of, and like many arts, you know, music, even, they have a way, you have a way of connecting to that, that puts you in a magical place where the mess is no longer the main ingredient, but the ability to transcend these things, to work through them, to overcome them, to find, you know, that connection that moves you to a better place. And I think that's why we all watch movies and read books and, you know, listen to music or explore chiropractic. I mean, whatever it is, you know, we're trying to find that better place.
Yeah.
I love that you said that, Rick, because my first initial response to Amanda, you know, reading that, what Amanda had wrote there was, oh my, she didn't really say that, did she? And then I sat back and I went, oh, I know Amanda. Surely, you know, she's got a reason, a purpose for saying it that particular way. But it did initially, it just shocked me. And then I thought, Lori, quit being like a dad, you know, quit pulling that old story back out that there's only one way, right? Mm-hmm. I know that part of my thought process just in the last, I don't know, year or so, watching all these movies, I was never a movie watcher. I always felt like I was wasting time. You know, if you sat down and you were watching a show, you were wasting time. So I never really learned how to watch movies. So Amanda is teaching me how to watch a movie. And I think I'm going to have to hold the remote, Rick, and do what you were saying and pause it and say, okay, now, what am I supposed to be getting from that? Because I'll watch the show and then all of a sudden I'll realize, oh, that just happened and I missed something, you know, along the way. So I think for me, it was really important. It was, I love that you put that in there. I really do. Even though it made me go, oh, you know, initially, I love that it's in there because it really made me stop and think. And I've worked with you for so long now that I knew there had to be more to it. You know, there was a purpose that you had written it that way. But I agree with you, Rick. It's for me, it's like there's not just one defined way. There's not just, you know, as deep as I am into my religion, there are still other ways of looking at things. And I think it's really important that we find those for ourselves, that we have that inspiration or revelation or whatever term you want to use for it, but that we find out for ourselves what that means for us, and that we're not just following along on the coattails of whatever that religion is.
Yeah, the coattails are the thing that make me concerned and is like, we really should write this book, right? Because we're living in a time where anyone can write anything and call it the truth. And it's like, yeah, but I mean, some of those things, in fact, we were just talking about the next piece that we might work on to talk about, like how we have had the experience because we've been so deep into all of these like universal truths and seeing all of the patterns of the great heroes and those magical moments where, you know, the sword of Gryffindor appears, right? Like there are just times where the hero gets to the end of himself or herself. And guess what happens? Like the universe intervenes somehow. It's a universal truth. But do we expect that in our own lives? And so there are these patterns that we've seen, but there have also been times where we've watched movies that are like remakes of old movies or new ones where it feels really icky. Have you all had that experience? You're just like, there's something just not right about this. Like, it doesn't portray humanity very honestly or the way things actually operate. So, you know, it's that piece of like, because we are wired for story, we've been using it for millennia to pass down wisdom and to explain how the world works to our children. And Kate, my friend Kate, who wrote the foreword to this book, I was just reading it yesterday. And, you know, she talks about like, so this isn't really a novel thing that Amanda and Aaron are pitching into the world. Like this, not too long ago, this was the thing. Like, yeah, build the campfire, you sit down and you talk about the ancestors and you make up stories and this is what you do. It's not novel, except that in our culture where parents are tired and having to work long hours and are more in a like relax and sort of consume mode at the end of the day, right? Like there's not that practice of being curious about what's going to happen. There's not the practice of, I mean, what do you think about that? Is that something that you would have done if given that opportunity? Like how many times was Aaron just like, oh my God, I can't believe they did that. And I was like, oh, I totally did that. And he was like, what? You know, yeah, let me tell you why, you know? I mean, what if we had those types of conversations instead of like, well, this is just a really, it's a movie, you know, everyone uses that term Netflix binge now, like I'm just going to Netflix binge. And to me, it's used like an escape, right? Is that kind of how we all read it? Like, I'm just going to go check out for a minute. The thing is that because of this, I don't get to check out. I'm always like, I'm going to Netflix binge to get my freaking answer because all this mess on my desk and in my relationships, like none of this stuff makes sense. And part of what you're saying about like this, you know, when should I pause the recording and ask the question, you know, I think a larger part of this story conversation is the idea that the stories showed up at the exact right times for me and for Aaron. So it's not so much about looking at it with every story or digging in for the sake of learning. It's more about what are the stories that are coming into my space? You know, when you hear like this person say, oh, you should really watch this new show on Netflix. And you're like, eh. But after the fourth person who says, have you heard of this show? Like, I'm like, okay, shutting everything down, turning on Netflix. Like that is my cue that there is something in there for me. So then that's how I engage it, right? Like what's in here for me? What character do I connect with? What is the conflict that is reflective? And so I just wanted to offer that because I heard both of you saying that like it makes, I don't want it to create nervousness or anxiety for people, like you're going to miss something. The idea is that it's being brought into your world for a reason. Those characters that get you excited, they're telling you something. The ones that piss you off, guess where the next bit of shadow work is, right? Like the ones that you're not sure you should like, right? Get curious about that. So,
you know, I think the really beautiful part about approaching it that way and doing it that way, you know, it's we hold such reverence to these sacred texts, more so because we've been taught to. But when you sort of step back, you realize that those sacred texts are written about people at that time and their experiences with whatever entity or feeling or conflict or experience that they were having. And it's, you know, we refer to it and we read it as if it's sacred. And part of what you're doing with this book and with your guys' message is taking that back to ourselves and realizing that, oh, our experience right now, our human experience, and the conflicts that we're dealing with, the issues, the things we're seeing out in the world and how we perceive them and how we handle them, and you know, in intimate scenarios, in how we present ourselves out there in the world, like all of that is sacred, you know? And so you sort of, you bring this story back to ourselves. And I really appreciate that.
Anyway, every person, every human being is a story. And, you know, your life is a story, very important. And before there was a Bible, there were stories, and there still are. I used to be quite a storyteller, and that's what the way I would preach was: come up with a story. Some of them weren't I made up characters, everything, but I wanted to make a point, and I knew that that was the way that would reach people's hearts. With some, you know, have a point, right? Some of the most important things that stick to us. Now, I have watched a lot of television, and I really get quite carried away in it. You know what I mean? It's even when it's not true, I think it's true. I told my wife that, I said, you know, I feel really bad for that person. I really do. And I know it's not real, but I still feel bad for them. And those stories affect us. And Jesus walked around telling stories, and it is, I guess, a religion of stories is what it is. The first time I heard it, I wasn't, you know, I thought, oh, maybe it's more like life skills or in stories or of story or something like that. But after the whole book, I'm a fan. We tried to watch some shows the other day. We watched the Avatar for a while, Airbender. Mm-hmm. And we watched
Harry Potter.
And I had no idea. I mean, I never, but I really liked it. I really liked Harry Potter and all the things. And I was surprised, because a lot of cartoons, they never give you the other side, but there were both sides of morality in Harry Potter. I mean, both sides of practicalism in Harry Potter. It's just, but anyway, I still believe all that stuff is true, and Hogwarts and all that.
That's true.
You asked about what our reaction to that your Bible was Airbender, Avatar, The Last Airbender. And I was chuckling because I'm thinking, you know what? I still hadn't recovered from the title, Religion, Religion of Story. You know, religion, the word itself, I have a hard time with because of my upbringing. You know, I was raised in having to say, or the only thing I knew to say in certain circumstances, you know, but all through elementary school, I just remember always saying, well, I can't, it's against my religion. It's against my religion. And yeah, that, so religion for me, just the religion of story, you know, there was a little bit of a kick in there for me, like, oh, do we have to call it religion?
A religion thing.
Yeah, but yes, the religion and story, I can see now how that it is, because even if you say, well, it's against my story, it's going to make me cry, but you know, how much story did I have that I got from wherever that, you know, it was against, whether it was a limitation, or it did keep me in some kind of moral high ground, you know, it was because it was against my story. So I see there's a lot of power in that, the religion of story. And I'm okay I'm gonna dabble into Avatar: The Last Airbender. See if I can get some more wisdom.
Sorry, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that there. No.
Well, Teddy, being brought up the way she was, she's been an anchor for me. I would have spun off into the stratosphere by now. You know, just when I got out of the church, I got out.
I didn't, you know, it still swirls around in there in me. But go ahead, Aaron.
Well, I was just going to say, I remember the day when mom and I, we were sitting at the dining room table and we were thinking of titles, and it was like A Religion of Story came out. I think that was like one of the first ones. You know, we were like, oh, that's it. But it's so controversial. Either you're going to run toward it or run away from it, probably. And so, but the thing is like you opened with, mom, it's like all religions are all religions of stories. You know, whether you believe that they actually happened or not, et cetera, they're all true in their own right. And they all are the common binding element of, you know, humanity. And so, you know, the religions are here and then the stories are up here, right? And so you can kind of think of this. Uh-oh, I'm going to say it, the sacred text of all sacred texts. Oh no, to unlock all the other sacred texts, which are also true, which are also real, you know, in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that was the thing that kind of broke me. I don't know if I actually put that story in the book, but there was this moment where, you know, in the honors program, it was a Socratic discussion. So they'd make you read heinous amounts of text every week and then come ready to have a discussion. And I'm like, first of all, this first book that you gave me was more pages than I've read in my entire high school career. The end. Like, what are you talking about? You want this done in a week. And then I have to have a clever thought about it. Like, I'm not even going to be in one piece. So we would get into these conversations and they would be asking these questions. And you know, they'd ask me what I thought about it. And so, of course, I did what everyone does, right? We read a story and we directly relate it to our own experience. And we project our own story and our own experience into that of the character. And my professor was like, well, that is one interpretation. And I was like, oh God, here it comes. And he's like, but there's this like really important thing that you're going to learn here. And that is author's intention. Because all story is written with a goal. There's an agenda, right? Like to capture a transcendent experience. To capture the history of a time, to relate a certain amount of wisdom to the next generation, right? Stories are written with intention. And so what he did was he was like, you can't just put your own thoughts into these stories. You really got to ask, what were these people thinking? They were living in these times under these circumstances. And then all of a sudden, as I started to understand the history and the context of what the stories, where the stories were being created, I started to think, like, okay, now I understand. There is an original interpretation. There is an original intention, right? And then there's what we take from it because it's landed in our space at the time. But there are those essential pieces, like you're saying, Aaron, those archetypal experiences and moments and characters that seem to appear in all of the really good stories. So, you know, that's one of those fun little things, or it's always that dance for me. When Aaron was little, what question did you love the most?
What do you think about that, or the one that didn't have any direction, or
what,
like,
what do you think they were trying to say with that movie, Aaron?
Oh.
He'd just be like, oh my God, mom, you know, he'd just be so annoyed. But I could tell that this was one of those films where it was like, I'm not sure about the agenda here, right? Like, I just had that feeling. And so I'd say, like, why do you think they're doing it? What do you think they're trying to teach? And we'd sort through it and we'd get to the end and he'd be like, yeah, I don't know if that's a good lesson. Right. But he could have just been sitting in front of the TV consuming this as if it were true, projecting his own experience that would have confirmed his maybe not healthy thoughts or feelings at the time, maybe undeveloped, right? And then he just has that confirmation bias happening instead of having someone insert themselves and say, I don't know though, do you think, what do you think about this? If that's true, can this be true too? Yeah, there were many moments, we should warn all the parents, there are many moments where you get eye rolls and big sighs and frustrated grunts, all the things.
Okay, so I have a question, because I remember a certain point, and I'm curious if this, like where this was at in your guys' journey when you started all this. I remember a certain point when, you know, I would come over and morning cartoons, wait, why won't you, you know, he'd be like, Mom doesn't want us watching SpongeBob. Let's watch something else. And I was like, well, it's a moment I want you to watch SpongeBob. Like, SpongeBob's great, you know? But like, there was a little bit of a generational gap, because there was the old SpongeBob that I knew. And then there were all like, there was this next version of screenwriters who were making all that stuff happen. And I remember that was a big conversation in your household, but we haven't revisited it since all of this. And since, you know, now that I'm older and can get it.
Mm-hmm. Well, so what we did, and you know, this is why it's so important to create mindfulness in a child, right? Because between the ages of, what is it, Carlin, like 0 to 7, right? Like they're just basically absorbing everything as true. Whatever is happening in their world, it must be true. Whatever the adults are saying.
Talking about sponges.
Right.
Pretty much what's happening. Sure.
Literally sponges. And they are so responsive to energy and they mimic everything. So parents do not want their children mimicking SpongeBob. Like the energy of that, there were some that were like so funny and we would sit and we'd watch, but like to just have him have this continuous dose of SpongeBob was just not good for anyone in the house. And sometimes it would be the perfect thing for him because he'd have so much energy. So we just set up his little trampoline in front of the big screen TV. Yeah,
I was about to say the trampoline. They tried. They tried using the trampoline and it still didn't work.
So we were very careful about what we let him watch by himself. If we were in the room with him, it was a different experience because then we could pause and ask a question or, you know, manage the energy going on in the space in some way.
I love that the word energy came up here, because in my 50 years plus of being around organized religion, I found that the culture just made it so, but I found it true in other religions that I looked at other than my own, but that people really had a greater relationship and familiarity and comfort with the tenets of their religion than they actually did the pursuit of a wholesome relationship with the God. And so Teddy made reference to, you know, this is against my religion. I noticed that she didn't say this was against my God. And so it's just this cultural thing, you know, that exists. And that's the way we thought about it, we felt about it. And I think that oftentimes in these arenas, people don't define things. I mean, I was such a sensitive kid because of what I was all being thrust into, and that I carried that sensitivity into almost everything. You know, I joke about becoming an expert on what love was not long before I ever knew what love was. But when we think about God, you know, because of how he's presented in story, oftentimes we see him and relate to him as a person. But God is a spirit, and we don't often ever really delve into that. Well, okay, what is spirit here? And it, you know, the Bible also says that God is love, and I don't think many people would wrestle with that. You know, you might wrestle with, well, if he's love, then, you know, why do these bad things happen to good people? And you know, that's a whole different thing. But again, I think they're more relating to the person that's setting up there, just watching all these evil things happen and not intervening. But if God is a spirit, when you really break into that to try to understand, break that open and try to get in there, you realize that that is energy. It's creative energy. It's loving energy. It's empathetic energy. It's kind energy. And so the problem is that love does not exist. That energy of love does not exist without its challengers. And so we have all these other characters who challenge this purity of what God is and what we could be in that relationship, that energetic relationship. And so then you move on and you start, you know, exploring a little bit of epigenetics, and you look at the quantum field. And, you know, we used to talk in my faith about the anointing. The anointing was the special thing that came on you. But if you break that down, it's energy. And so the quantum field is just now our understanding that he's not just this anointing over here that you could get into on occasion, but that exists. And the more that we can understand that energetic field and connect to that. And so stories, even so many of the stories in the Bible, other sacred texts as well. And, you know, you could go on and on and on, but all of those stories, the original intent, as we're talking about here, was to get us to understand this love that we're all trying to feel and embrace and hold and get a hold of, and that we could communicate outward as well as taking it in, that we want to make this space around us. You know, we talk about changing the world, and we all know that that's rooted deeply in a sense of a desire to change yourself. And that's really how the world changes. It's one person at a time. But I love the fact that the energy came up, because what we're relating to here in story is that these stories have an energy. The original intent had energy. And so words have an energy. Facial expressions have an energy. Body language has an energy. I mean, you know, it's amazing. If you put a dead body, a corpse under the right microscope, you can see it's still moving. It still has an energy field that's moving it. It's just amazing. I mean, you know, when you delve into that element of science, and so we're all in this energetic field, and we're choking on it oftentimes because we have swallowed the challenges to all of that. And we do create the wrong narrative. And so the whole exploration is all about getting the story right, mm-hmm. and then taking our story and letting it unfold into this bigger story, this much more elaborate, much more organized story that's trying to take our messes and turn them into magic. And so I didn't have a problem with the religion of story. I gulped a little bit at Avatar being the Bible, but the sacred text, but not from a point of being challenged by it, but just from recognizing, you know, that this could, you know, I could see people bumping into that, mm-hmm. and maybe not even going any further along. But, you know, I've already told you how I feel about the entire book. I mean, to me, it's a masterpiece. And I think, you know, over time, I could actually envision the book actually being a classic. I can see it, you know, being in educational institutions where this is the book that's handed out as one of the required reading. And so, you know, I'm not just saying that. I feel that strongly about the energy of the story being told, the message being, you know, shared. And I see the power of it, not only from, you know, knowing you for a number of years and watching each other grow here, but seeing the effect, the powerful effect that it had on Aaron. And, you know, this is like, hey, I'm not making this story up. You know, here's some proof. you know, of what the outcome can be when you get to the intent or the energy of the whole reason, you know, you wrote it in the first place. So I think it's just incredibly powerful that people, you know, people should read it, because I also think there's a lot of answers in it. I think there's a lot of healing in it. I think there's a lot of direction in it. And there is a lot of challenge in it. And so if you're a wimp, you're probably going to need to watch more movies before you can come back to the book. But, you know, that we'll leave that with you and see what your experience is. But, you know, if you're somebody who's ready to grow and you're ready for strong meat, you don't want to just suck on milk the rest of your life, then, hey, there's something here that you can really, you know, sink your teeth into.
What was the biggest challenge for you, Rick? Like for you, what was kind of the moment where you were like, okay, there's something, really something here?
That I was challenged by?
Challenged by or just struck by, like in this conversation around religion and spirituality, was there a moment that?
Well, the moment that, well, you know, I commented on each chapter because there was just so many good things in there. But, you know, I got my cup of coffee one morning and it was very early. I'd woken up about, I don't know, 4 o'clock in the morning or something. And I decided, okay, I'm going to read another chapter. And it happened to be the one on destiny. And you started off with a quote on fate. And man, you know, I'd only had a couple sips of coffee, so I jumped all over that. So I'm writing to a man and I said, wait a minute, what about process and intervention and co-author? And I can't, you know, I just could not believe you started off with this, you know, with this fate quote. And so, you know, I sent my message off and then I continued to read, not drinking the rest of my coffee. And then I got this short little message back from Amanda that said, keep reading, sir. And I could see her face. I could hear her tone. I mean, it was just like she was right here, you know, in my office as I read those words. And so I wrote back to her and I said, yeah, I really should have known where you were going. I said, I'm going to make it a rule now to drink the whole cup of coffee before I read anything or before I at least comment on it. So the biggest challenge for me was, I think, you know, I wasn't challenged by the book at all. I mean, you know, my greatest takeaway from the book was, you know, the two-pronged feeling that I had, one of really, really wanting a do-over. I wanted a do-over for myself, for my kids, for the people I loved, ever loved. I really, you know, wanted to, you know, I'm 65 now, so I wish I had, you know, got this at when I was 18, 20 years of age. It could have made such a huge difference. On the other hand, it gave me a sense of being courageous and determined. And, you know, I want to finish strong. This excited me because it was another, I think it was another tool, you know, in the toolbox to be able to share the truth, the intention, and the energy of truth and story, you know. And somebody once said, you know, the Bible says there's only one way to God, and that's through Christ Jesus. And then somebody else said, yeah, but there must be 500 million ways to Jesus. And I think that is, you know, a very, very, very true. And I mean, God is so big. I mean, how could you fit him into one, you know, one container or to one set of ideas or to one interpretation or one? And so, you know, for people who feel like, you know, you got to buy the truth and sell it not, well, that's really true. But you got to be sure that it's the truth that you buy. And, you know, that's a little more of personal responsibility there to plow through. And so that's, you know, that's how I feel about this book and the work that you guys have done. And I'm much more excited about this book than I've been about other books. And I really do think it's one of the best books that I've ever read. I recommend it to anybody, everybody. And I'm going to do my part to promote it. I think people need, I think where our world is right now, I think this is timely. I think it's very, very timely that this work has come out, you know, at this time. I really do.
I want to talk about the book, my experience with it, and it being raised and, you know, surrounded. Like, I mean, when I was little, we went to church every day of the week. So, I mean, it was really ingrained in me. And, you know, I heard a lot of the stories and such, but what hit me with this book? And then being able to read all the way through it and come to the end with Aaron's conclusion, the conclusion of it all, you know, like blew me away. I mean, I cry now just thinking of it, because we failed here. I was raised with the Bible. I mean, really raised with the Bible, scripture quoted in the house all the time. And I turned around and did the same thing to my children. I raised them that way. The problem was all the wisdom that's in there. If the child rejects the rules, if the child rejects, they throw all of it out. Most of them, you know, they walk away from God. They walk away from the Bible because of the rules. And we weren't engaged with the stories in a way that, you know, I realize now that's all I knew was Bible stories. You know, all the movies that are talked about in here, in this book, I was not familiar with. So I grew up with Bible stories. And I told my husband today, what if, you know, I don't know if I have the mind space right now, because I'm doing other things. But it would be interesting to go back through the stories that I knew, that I grew up with, and look at it this way, because there's so much wisdom in there. And what could I have learned that I didn't learn? And what are the things I did learn that I shouldn't have learned? Because it was not the author writing it with what intent, but the teller of it telling it with intent. And so this book like opened my mind in ways that I can't even describe yet. I haven't found the words. I only know it cracked something open in me that it's gonna take me a while to really uncover and understand. And I'm so like proud, privileged to watch Aaron live this out. And like Rick said about wanting to do over, gosh, what if I could have, you know, even if I just used the text that we had or, you know, the story that we had and engaged it differently, to bring out the wisdom and you know, Aaron writing about what he's been able to learn through story to save himself from making those same decisions. And it wasn't just this right or wrong, you know, you do this and boom, you know, it was the way that he's able to work through it. I'm so impressed. I'm so amazed. I want to grow up to be like him. Like, there is something in here that I feel like is world changing. Like Rick said, this is a time now. Like, what could happen? What could we create on earth if the children coming up were engaged in story as a religion, not like we have purported religion, but like you said, story has always been religion, or religion, it comes as a result of story, or a story surpasses, it comes before religion.
And anyway, my hat's off to you. I'm really impressed with the book. I recommend it highly, especially to parents that you still have kids. And, you know, kids love to watch movies. That's a great way to engage them. In my day, it was a way to have a few moments of time, stick them in front of a TV, you know, because I didn't have TV. And then when I got it, it was a great babysitter. You know, it didn't occur to me that, I mean, I was very careful about what I put them in front of. Most of them were little Christian cartoons and stuff, but still I wasn't engaging with it. I wasn't using it in a way that story is just so powerful. And my hat's off to you. Love the book, love the book, love the book. Did you want to say something?
I neither. You spent more time with Aaron than I spent with all five kids. And I'm saying that because that's what, I mean, he came out very well. And I'm like, geez, think of the hours that Amanda put in and asking him questions. So that's amazing. Boy, nobody taught me how to raise kids, you know. I mean, nobody teaches us, or some people purport to teach you or whatever, or you think you know how to raise kids, or your father raised you a certain way and your mother raised you a certain way, and that's the way you raise yours. And I raised mine like my mother and not like my father, thank God. But anyway, yeah. So, you know, they still love me. So, but it's very, very good. And the story is, now that I'm seeing these stories that I heard about and do that, you know, Nemo, I watched Nemo a long time ago. And, but I never saw Harry Potter, never saw Lord of the Rings, not even Star Trek, none of those. And I'm sure that all of those have a way of teaching morality and sound reasoning when you have come to a crossroads or a Y in the road. Goodness, if I ever would have, I don't know, I took a lot of wrong turns. And when you take a wrong turn, you got to come all the way back. And it's not as easy as. So anyway.
Yeah. That was the.
That's what got me. I mean, man, she really put some time into raising her child. And I was always working. And I don't know, half the time I didn't know what mine were doing. I'm glad.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, funny thing how that worked. I was pretty sick by the time Aaron got here. So all I could do, I was like, please don't make a mess in the house. Let's just sit down and watch television together. Like, this was my capacity for mothering at this point. But because of the training with the honors program, it was like, okay, I can actually make a dent here. Like, I can actually be a decent mom, even though I'm stuck on the couch most hours of the day. So it's always curious to me how those things happen at apparently just the right times to make sure that things like these books get out when they need to. You know, all these things seem to have happened at just the right time. And one thing I heard Rick say it, and I heard you say it too, both of you, like this piece of wishing that you could go back a few decades and do it over again. Like, to me, that is so, I mean, Aaron is only 19 and I still feel that way about some things, right? And so what would you say to people who have that feeling as they're reading this book? Because I think at any age, whether their kids are already 40 or 50 years old, or whether they are, you know, five and they've missed out on the first 5 years of opportunity to really make a dent, what would you say to them? How would you encourage them?
Reread the Destiny chapter and Fate, and that it's all perfect that you didn't do it.
Yeah. Well, it is quite the overshadowing thing, the do-over. But I was asleep the other day, and I'm just bringing this up. We've never even talked about it. I don't even think he knew I heard. He was on the phone with one of our kids, and they're a movie buff, you know, for their birthdays, whatever. You just buy them some tickets, you buy them, you know. And they were discussing what they're watching and what, and you know, I'm thinking, wow, it never ends. Aren't we still passing around, oh, this is a good show to watch, or this is a good, have you seen this movie? And I guess it wouldn't, we could do it now. There's conversation that could be had about the movie. Well, what did you think? What do you think the, I mean, asking those questions, I suppose, as an adult, and just getting more conversation out of the movie conversation than saying, oh, this is a great show, you should watch it. It's an opportunity right there to say, yeah, I'll go watch it, and then we can talk about it.
Who is your favorite character?
Yeah, for, you know, it is a good question. I mean, you know, I think you always have to realize that, you know, the past is gone. It's gone. And, you know, if you want to spend all your time there, you know, it's a valley of regret and despair and sadness and, you know, maybe some high moments. But I think we all realize that, you know, whatever truth has come to you, you embrace it, you know, where you are. I mean, by the time Jaden was born, my grandson, I was already so intent on being deliberate. I've been much more deliberate in my role in his life than I ever was in my kids' lives. And, you know, for probably 2 years, Jaden and I went to the movies every Tuesday. And so, I mean, I was already spending that time, and I would ask him questions, you know, I'd say, what's your favorite part? What scene did you like the most? But I didn't expand on that the way that you did. But in my conversations with him, I was expanding, not about the movies, but in so many other ways. I'm doing that. And, you know, we're in different states now. And so I don't have the same opportunities with him. But I think for people who have this feeling, you know, I don't think it's a foreign feeling. I think it's a very generic, common feeling that people have when they come to the threshold of, you know, of a greater truth and better understanding. But, you know, I, you know, if it's complicated, it's not wisdom. I mean, that's the thing I've learned, is that wisdom is simple. And so you have to start from where you are and take that truth and augment it, you know, into your life. And so, you know, this has inspired me for new ways to try to communicate with Jaden, but I'm not going to necessarily go back and try to watch, you know, all of these movies, but there'll be, you know, new opportunities to watch things. And, you know, I'll start from there and we'll have conversations. And I'm, you know, he's already following in Aaron's footsteps, I'm sure, because he knows how to roll his eyes and he knows how to show me that the disgust with the questions that I ask him. And you know, so he's on, you know, a good path after all. And, you know, his favorite thing is when I challenge him, he's like, Papa. I mean, I don't know how many times I've heard that, you know.
Every good hero rejects the calling. You know, at the beginning.
Here you go.
They always get pushed into it by some great force.
So my answer is start where you are, you know. Mm-hmm. So people who feel that way, you start where you are. You can't go back. You know, don't waste any energy on that. You got to go ahead. Go forward. Okay. There is a scripture. Paul said, this one thing I do. Of course, he did a lot of things and said a lot of things. But he did say, this one thing I do. Forgetting those things that are behind and reaching for those things that are before. So I think you start where you are. Walk in the greater truth, you know, and all that you get understanding. And when you understand something better, you do it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it was even Oprah said, hey, you do the best you can until you know to do better. When you know to do better, you do it. And, you know, I think that's part of the human experience. You know, that's how I would say.
Yeah. I was going to say, in the words of one of our favorite characters right now, he would say, he would put Paul's statement like this: be a goldfish, because goldfish have 10 second memories, right? Forget what's behind you, be a goldfish.
Feel your feelings, be sad, be angry, then be a goldfish. And that's the thing about stories, is that they can be rewritten. Yeah.
So that. It's a competitive thing. It's a competitive thing. You know, my story's better than your story. My dad's bigger than your dad.
That's not what I said.
No, I'm teasing.
Well, I like the point that you said it's rewritten, because my thing with my grandkids has always been, we're not watching TV, because, you know, that's their whole thing. It's tablets, it's a TV, it's the, can I have your phone, can I play a game? And I've always said, no, at Mima's house, we don't do that. You know, we are here to spend time together and to have fun together, and we romp and we play and we play games and we go to the park and, like, we have fun, right? But this has given me a whole different perspective of, okay, well, maybe we can watch TV and we can still be together and we can still learn things and we can still have fun. I think it's just our perspective in what we're doing with the TV or the thing that we're engaged in. And so for me, it's given me a different perspective on TV and how to integrate with my grandkids. And I've kind of had that thrown back in my face a couple of times lately, because over the last probably 2 or 3 years, probably 3 years now, my oldest granddaughter, who's 13 now, going on 14, had me reading Harry Potter. And I love Harry Potter. I mean, like, I think it's a great story, but the way I was raised was that magic and it's evil and you can't do it, right? And so I really struggled with that. And so I thought, oh, okay, Marley, for you, I will read Harry Potter, you know? And so I did, and I love it. And we have all kinds of conversations about it. And she can tell you anything you want to know about Harry Potter. And she'll probably tell you which book it's in. But then I had her read, she wanted to do a challenge on who could read the title of the book. I can't think of it now. But anyway, it's a series of 8 books going on. There's another one coming out. And she challenged me to read it with her. And so that was a whole new adventure where she'd say, well, I'm ahead of you. And then I'd get ahead of her. And so that was fun too. So I think there's all kinds of things we can do with story. Mm-hmm. But I find it interesting that with my granddaughter, that's pulling me back into this religion story. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know a lot of religious folks have kind of issues with Harry Potter, but I kind of, like, in relation to that, Lori, I have a question, and that question is, how did you see God show up in Harry Potter?
Oh, wow. Okay, so first of all, Keepers of the Lost City is the other series. How did I see God show up in Harry Potter? I think Dumbledore is a great example, with all that he can see and all that he can, he's everywhere, right? Like, he knows what Harry's doing all the time, even though Harry doesn't know he's doing it. So, I mean, I think that's a perfect example of how you can see God in Harry Potter.
I personally saw God as the magic, and okay. Satan and the dark forces, whatever you want, is the, you know, the dark side of that and whatnot. But I can see Dumbledore being that. Then I think, you know, oh my gosh, we're just nerding out on Harry Potter now. I'm sorry. It's just in my DNA.
This is another episode.
Right. But I thought, you know, I thought I'd ask, because, you know, it's kind of the metaphor of everyone's got the magic in them, if magic is God, and they're using that magic to manifest what they want in the world and, you know, put the not so great stuff away and, you know, clear that up. So.
Well, I'm going to go on record here and say I'm not willing to make the religion of story a religion. And I don't think that watching movies is the only way we could do this. I still think getting away from the electronics and spending some time in nature and doing some other activities is a great way to spend time. So, you know, I don't think we want to give people the impression that, okay, you know, you got to go, you got to order, you know, the 100 videos here and don't leave your house until you get through every one of them. But I think the message, of course, is to incorporate that communication about story and everything that you do, which I think is the beautiful message here that, you know, that I see.
Yeah. And like Kate's foreword, she talks about the language of story, and that's really what it is. Like, it gives you that common language to talk about all the other things that are going on in the world, right? Like when he was struggling with friends, we talked about, you know, Ponyo and what was his name? How do you say his name?
Sasuke.
Yay. You know, and we talk about, you know, so it just becomes the way that we, it was like this common reference point that made talking about all the other things so much easier. I feel like I might have started to interrupt someone who was getting ready to share.
I wanted to add something with the book. You know, it gives such great you know, suggestions through the posed as questions to parents and people who are reading the book. But as a clinician, rewriting stories is, you know, what I'm in all day with clients. So reading the book, to me, I was thinking, oh, how many of my clients am I going to recommend this book to? And they're not because they have kids or grandkids or that they're kids themselves, but this idea of being able to say, you know, whether it was through a religion or an experience or a family life, this idea of this is what I grew up believing. And is it possible for there to be a different kind of truth? And for people in that healing journey, that the answer has to be yes. Mm-hmm. It absolutely has to be. So having, I some of the greatest sessions I have with clients are we're talking about movies or a book or Encanto or Ted Lasso, whatever, it doesn't matter. But they come in and pick this one little line or a quote or a character, and then that becomes the thing that we talk about. Why are you, you know, why do you relate to this? What about that spoke to you? And it gives I experience it almost as the seed for something to start expanding and growing. Even Game of Thrones, I had clients coming in at the same time going, how is it that I like this so much? How is it that I like so many characters that are really bad guys? You know, and getting to dive into, well, what do you think about that? But the idea of expanding the story and the possibilities to infinity, and that, yes, this can be true and this can also be true. They don't cancel each other out. I think it's part of the healing that happens.
Yeah. Absolutely. And one of the fun things that came into my text box this week was someone who said, you know, I just saw your post and I was thinking, I have this one client that I cannot break through with. Like, you know, I've recommended this book and I've recommended this and we've talked about that. And yet I cannot, why don't I just use story? Duh, isn't this what you taught me? And so they asked for recommendations, like what, you know, this is the person, what they're experiencing, the struggle that this person's trying to help them break through with. And oh, they have kids, so it could be a kids movie. I was like, oh, see, now that is fun, right? Because it's not just parents, it's anyone who's trying to create change. Story is one of the fastest ways to do that. I love it. All right, well, any last thoughts? I'm really excited about this. We're, you know, today, thank you for being here to talk about the spiritual component. Coming up, I have a few educators, a few of whom actually made the book. Aaron's very own Professor McGonagall will be there. Hopefully his improv teacher and the founder of his amazing school and a few others to talk about what this means for learning. Like, what did they see through the educator's lens as the possibility? So, but thank you all for being here and sharing. I mean, I don't think there's anything more tender, like Alyssa was saying, right? There's nothing more tender than talking about what you actually believe about the way this place works and who manages it and your responsibility in it. Like, it's, this is the most important conversation. So thank you for being here and sharing. Are there any last comments or questions before we wrap it up?
Can we hang out a minute after we leave the recording?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm about to be in trouble, so I'm gonna go now. Just kidding. All right, well, thank you all for being here. Thank you, listeners and hopefully readers. I hope that you found this a valuable discussion. I really want you to know that we have had at least a dozen people read this before the release from all different backgrounds and experiences. And I really want people to understand, like, the big feelings are normal and they're good. Lean in, get curious, ask your kids what you should do with them, because usually they have better answers than we do.
Feel the feelings and then be a goldfish.
That's a wrap.